Accession number 18548, Reel 2.
Alfred Lee, Reel 2.
Right, when he blew the whistle, one of the chaps got out of the slit trench and magazine on Bren, automatic, one magazine off. He blew the whistle, back to trench, waited a few minutes. While one was loading the magazine, the other one had another magazine ready. The whistle went, and we did alternative of loading the Bren and firing it. Are you with me?
Yes.
You know. I think we got through three or four magazines each. And all of a sudden, Jerry retaliated by firing these six-barrel mortars, commonly known as morning minis. He must have been spot on, because our trenches, there's trees just behind us, and he hit one of the mortar bombs, must have hit the tree, and the base of the bomb must have took the butt of the Bren clean off like a whistle. So that was it. Pack up, retreat.
Where was this?
This was in the Triangle. It's called the Triangle. It's just west of Roundabout, up that area.
And when would that have been about?
I don't know, that must have been about July. We also got plagued by mosquitoes, which weren't very good.
Was there anything you could do about the mosquitoes?
Well, he used to give us this cream and used to put this camouflage net over our faces, you know. But I made a bad mistake by taking my boots off for an hour to ease my feet. I got bitten on the... There's an instep here. And I don't know if you've ever been bit by mosquitoes, but your itch was, you know.
Did you keep fit in Normandy or did you fall sick?
I was complained by, I had a couple of boils, you know, boils on your neck, and that, I suppose, was different grub and all that water, so I had two boils. They weren't really nice. At the time, we changed over, had a Captain Mitchell out the Royal Scots joined the regiment. Well, the previous S Company commander got wounded, he went away, so we got Captain Mitchell, the Royal Scots. Nice bloke, he said to me, "You going to shave yet?" Because I couldn't shave here, because I had these two balls.
On your cheek?
On here, just down here. Anyway, the breakthrough came, you know, the breakthrough. After, you know, a couple of weeks, and as we advanced there, we dug in, and the Polish armour div came through us. The first Polish armour div. And the Cromwell tanks and all that, they were heating the dust there, you know, plenty of dust. And then the same day, the RAF put in a bombing raid towards the Falaise Gap. Now, somewhere along the line, something went wrong, but we saw these Lancasters coming in, I don't know, about 2,000 feet. All of a sudden, we saw the bomb doors open, and we saw the bombs coming down just in front of us. Well, they missed us. Just about. And this small Oster plane was flying underneath him, wagging his wings. You know what Oster is?
A light plane.
Light plane spotter, he's wagging his wings, did a good job. We're putting out these yellow triangles and yellow smokes. Well, behind us were putting them out, so I don't think the RAF knew where the line was. We'd probably seen a yellow triangle right in front of them. But on top of that, Spitfire circled around once. And he was set around twice and he came down and strafed us. He never done any damage, like, you know. But I remember seeing them old machine guns in his wing, like, you know. Fire. I said, "Man, this is great," I said. After that, we broke through, we advanced towards, I think it was the River Seine. And we got the River Seine, there was more horse-drawn material of the German army than anything. Horses everywhere, loose. One or two Germans held up down there, and when they got a bit of a bash at them, they surrendered. But I remember this German coming out, a young German kid, arrogant, marched in front of the rest of prisoners. And the rest of prisoners were Chinese, Mongols, Russians, whatever. But also at the same time, Gerrit left this, it was a Morris Commercial 1500 weight behind of the British Army, whether it being took in Dunkirk or not, but he left it behind. Hey, if some lads got to go, and we had to go over, like, you know. The old stream was a bit whoppy, but still went. We crossed the Seine, and then we headed for St. Valery. Now, the chap whose jeep I took over in Normandy, he came back. So, more or less, had to, yeah, and the jeep back to him, and his job, like, you know. So, I was pushed onto this 1500 weight Morris Commercial. Now, just before the half, I had a tin of paint. I had to paint this German camouflage out and go back to Army Green, which I did. I went into the half with the 6-pounders. I was taking 6-pound ammunition with them, you know. Supplying them, different other sort jobs. I think Le Havre wasn't too bad really for attack, you know. More or less, soldiery. Once we took the position, because we came from inside land in towards them, took one or two places, he slung the bag in. So, where were we? Just outside Fee Camp at the time, in some racing stables. We had one or two nights in free camp, and then at the same time, old Jerry Montgomery dropped the 6th Airborne, no, the 1st Airborne in Arnhem. And we couldn't get up there, something to do with the transport or something. All the transport was taken from us for supplying ammunition and all that. So we eventually went up to Holland, we went through Brussels, through like that. The biggest shot we've seen ATS walk around in Brussels. You know. Anyway, we went
Why
up there.
Why was that so surprising?
Eh?
Why was that so surprising?
Well, see, women in front of us, that hadn't been done before, was it? You know, female in front of us. It was a laugh, really, yeah. Anyway, we went up to a place called Best in Holland. You know the Best?
No.
It's just outside Eindhoven. So, the 1500 weight got clapped out. I lost that job, so I went into D Company.
As a rifleman? A
rifleman D Company, yeah. And we held the houses along by the railway. One or two instances there. I went out on a night patrol with a corporal. Was 4 or 5 of us, and went about 1/2 mile into Jury Lines and came across this horse and cart, which was, you know, Germans had it quite a bit, and was loaded up with ammunition, bazookas and all that. And we laid dogger there, and 3 Germans come up, you know. Anyway, corporal opened with his Sten gun. And he hit the first German right in the head. And I remember vital that the bullets were in his helmet. And blue flashes coming off his own with a, you know. Hey, he knocked him out, and he knocked the second German out. And the third German was a young kid. So we took him prisoner, and we belted back to our own lines, across the fields and all that. And ground across the fields, across the fence and all that. The young kid got stuck on the fence. So the corporal gave him a bloody big kick up the arse and sent him over the fence. Anyway, he got back. We found out later that the corporal broke a bone in his shirt, in his foot, you know, kicking him. Other instances were like every morning we were on the top floor of this house, and this Jerry used to come by in the fields. Quite a tall Jerry, used to give the V sign to us, but it wasn't a V sign, it was two fingers. Anyway, he did that quite a few times. Anyway, we got the sniper up, our sniper. He came by that morning, put the two fingers up, and the sniper got him. So yeah, that was the last time he put two fingers up at us.
What did people think of snipers?
We lost all our snipers in Normandy. As a matter of fact, I took the sergeant sniper back to base because he was bomb happy. He was clapped out, you know, bomb happy, as I says. Your nerves had gone. And one or two of the lads went like that way.
So you lost them because they all went casualty?
We found the rifle of one sniper, Mustaine, I don't know if the Germans killed him or what. But lost all our snipers. There's one sniper left, was called Corporal Flaherty. Had quite a bit to do with him later on. Anyway, we're up in Best, and the operation was to clear the west of Holland, called Operation Pheasant. Which is the old 51st. Hang on a minute, Willis Street. Anyway, Operation Pheasant, which we cleared quite a few towns. I think about 13 towns there. So that was finished.
What did you do in Operation Pheasant?
Well, I was more or less with the riflemen doing clearing houses, you know, one or two actions. We weren't in action all the time. But if you see that book, I'll probably give you some idea what we're in like, you know.
Was it difficult to clear the area?
One or two sticky points, but it was cleared, like, because Jerry knew he was on a retreat, he had to pull back. But
were you still with D Company?
Yeah, I was still with D Company, cleared it. Trouble is you couldn't dig in a slit trench anywhere because the water level was very high there. So more or less we're digging in on the canal banks. But on the whole it was... we got shelled and stonked going towards attack. But as soon as we got there he pulled out again. So more or less it wasn't easy and it wasn't hard, but it was, you know, gritty. It was tiring. I suppose that was it, like, you know.
Which month was this that you were on Operation Pheasant? 1945?
No, 44. It was just before, about September, I think it was September, October. You'll see in that book there, if you look, that when the operation started.
And then what do you remember?
Well, we pulled out of there, and then we were pushed up towards, you know, the island between Nijmegen and Arnhem?
Yes.
We took over from the 101st paratroopers there. And I think the company were in about 4 or 5 houses there, and we held a line. Well, we held there, we kept dog war all day, we kept in the house all day and just went out at night time doing a patrol and a guard. But occasionally, well, I think I went up this forward observation house or farmhouse. Must have been about a mile and a half from our company lines. A section used to go up there every 24 hours. The house and the farmer, well, the farmhouse had a byre, which you could walk from the house into the byre, and they also had a cellar, which was full of American tin food and all that. Anyway, we used to guard there through the day, night time. Night time, we used to fire, Jones used to go on the bank, used to fire the spandrel through the barn. You know what a spandrel is, do you?
Machine gun.
Yeah, he used to fire trips and all that sort of thing. But you stand there, head of the top of the cellar, and look straight through, you used to fire. You couldn't touch us, so we're all right. And through the day, we used to go up the stairs and used to get into the loft and used to observe from the loft, like, you know, one or two slits off and keep yourself dog all. One of the chaps was, his eyesight was not that good. Just wear these thick glasses. He shouldn't have been in the regiment, really. So, when we came out of there, we had to come across the fields and all that. And very being low, you just see stretches of water, you know, like miniature lakes. So, we're coming back across the field, and he opened up on us. Jerry saw us, it was moonlight. And we all just took our wheels, like we run like hell, we did. Well, this chap, being poor eyesight, what he thought was solid land turned out to be a lake, whatever, so he went straight into it. Anyway, he grabbed all of them and called them all the silly bastards and the son and, you know, brought them back. Anyway, he went out the line after that. So, what Jerry done, he blew the dikes a couple of days later. And, he flooded us out. Well, we came out, we marched out at 2 o'clock at night time, or in the morning, early morning, where water was up to our knees. The brain carrier went off the road, he lost him in the ditch. Nick, the driver, wasn't very pleased. Hopped his neck in water. So we marched through, we came to high ground, and, dried ourselves out. At the meantime, the section that was in their Ford house, they got took prisoners. We lost them, I think 7 blokes. But I remember a bloke called Douglas from Newcastle. When the Russians liberated the prison camp, I think he went on Radio Moscow and spoke at, you know, took to Moscow and he spoke on the radio. So I was told, like, you know. So we marched back to the high ground and the Royal Engineers and these outboard, you know, these craft with outboard motors took us back across the river and went to Sir Toganbosch. And funny enough, a Dutch kid said to us, my mate was Smithy, he said, would you like to come to your house for coffee? Yeah, so we went to his house for coffee and they said to us where you've been. We said, been on the island. And about 5 minutes later, these Royal Army Service Corps drivers come in, the divisional. And the young Dutch kid said to us, he said, Johnny was at the island, and they came out with water up the rear.
The chin.
Royal Army Service Corps told a bit of a yarn, like, you know. So me and Smithy gave him a dirty look, you know. And that was it. So Christmas dinner was coming round. I think about 24th, and all of a sudden we just get through our Christmas dinner, and the word came, pack all your gear up. So we packed our gear up on a wagon, and we were down to the Ardennes when von Rundstedt broke through. And we're on the road about 3 or 4 days, and eventually ended up a place just south of Liège. There we were held in reserve. He got all tricks again. I think it was 4 or 5 of us looking around the countryside. Now we knew where these Belgium girls were in this big chateau. So we went down to see them. At the same time we went back to an American service depot. Negro supply drives and all that. I went by there, walked down the road, one of the lads was playing with his rifle with a trigger guard. We saw the safety catch off and sent a round off up the air, like, you know, fired a round. And he had a bit of a laugh, you know, bloody fool and all that, you know. Well, 5 minutes later, this lorry come down the road full of American Negroes, fully armed, tin hats on. This German sniper somewhere around here. We didn't say anything, like, you know, laughed ourselves, but apparently the round had gone past a sentry at the gate. So that was it. But beginning, Jerry started firing these V1 rockets at us, Liège around that area. So we were in this farmhouse, but we were in the by where the cows were, and our bed was up in the airloft, which meant going up about 6 feet up in this small square in the airloft. I think about 4 or 5 slept in there. Well, when you start firing these V1s at us, we used to lie awake there, you know, listen to them coming over. And one time the motor cut out. So I don't know if you ever realise it, about 4 or 5 blows trying to get us through a 3 foot square roll down this ladder all at once. The time we got out there, the bomb had gone off, so. So, I think just after New Year's Day, we called up, we went into line again, and heavy frost, and a Sherman tank of the 33rd Armoured Brigade was at us, and we went up this road with a Sherman tank advancing. Well, the tank had hardly get up the road because ice on the floor there, and we'd be doggo about it. Skidding about, like, you know, who wanted to be crushed by a tank, like. So we got up the top of the hill, and just top of the hill there, we saw these Germans running down the hill, or SS, about 3 or 4 of them. So Smutty got down behind a Bren gun, just kind of opened up on them, and the officer said, "Don't fire, give our position away." Which was, I couldn't understand, so we never fired, so we advanced, we went through this graveyard. And he opened up on us, Jerry, with mortars, and we went dog over, you know, behind headstones and all that. And one of the chaps took a flying leap into a grave, and feet first went straight through a coffin. The mortar bomb bust, and he got peppered in the face, you know, not with shrapnel, with dirt and all that, a bloke called Rankin. Anyway, we held the line there, one or two skirmishers.
Where is this?
This was south, in down the Ardennes. I can't tell you the name of the place because it was just another village to us.
Somewhere near Liège?
Yeah, it was about 20 miles south of Liège, down that way. So we did that action, and that's about the last action we'd done. And then we went back up to Holland after the Ardennes. And the Grand Slam was called the Riceville Forest. Does that ring a bell?
Indeed.
Now, we went up the Riceville Forest. We dug in there, and we lost one or two of the lads going into the forest by shelling. But the edge of the forest we dug in, slit trench. Smithy and me were there. And what we heard is bloke shouting, "Help me, help me." So we don't know if it was a Jerry or what it was. Anyway, we kept doggo. And then the sergeant come and said, "Give hand with a stretcher." One of the lads had been shot through the stomach, so we carried him back to the first aid dressing station. And went back to Slit Trench. Next morning, Smithy, me, and I think another 3 of us, and this Sergeant Ross, stripped down, skeleton kit, bandolier, just a rifle, no hat or nothing. And we did a patrol or a recce in the forest. Now we did this recce about 3/4 of a mile in the forest, and I'll never forget the smell of pine. I still smell of pine. It was dead silent, eerie, you know, ghostly. We saw something like a wreck of a Spitfire or something there in the forest, but that was all. So we come back, and the sergeant reported, like, you know, nothing there. So the company advanced on the right of the road. We had three Churchills going up the road, and C Company on the left. So we advanced through the forest. We passed a point where we'd been on a recce, past that, and all of a sudden he struck us with mortars and all that. He mortared us. And what with the mortar striking the trees and all that, the shrapnel came down. And Corporal Andrews, he got wounded in the end, in the head. I think another lad got wounded in the backside. One or two more. And Smithy, my mate, he'd been through North Africa, so he'd seen a bit in the Northern Fusiliers. A lump of shrapnel went right through his mess tin, which I think was the final moment he went bomb happy. So he got sent back. I never saw him afterwards. So we rallied round, started the rain, so we put our gas capes over to protect us. And previous to attack, we'd had these photographs by air reconnaissance of the crossroads and a German bunker that we had to take. So we got the crossroads, we did a bayonet charge through there. The Churchill tank was behind us. I turned around and I got knocked out. And carried on. To the left of me, I saw the platoon officer go down. The young cop called Stronach heard him screaming out for his money. He got a mortar bomb. And we carried on. And I think I was in front with a bloke called Peter McGrory. He was an 8th Army bloke. Now, what he got issued was either a pick or a shovel for digging in. Unfortunately, I had a pick. Now, I don't know if you try to dig a slit trench in sandy soil with a pick. So I was more or less like a dog. So Peter said to me, he's just over there, he says, there's a jerry over there. So I saw the jerry and I let off 10 rounds with him. And what being sandy soil, I must have got sand into the bolt so the damn thing jams the rifle. I said, we're in the right state here. So Peter said to me, he said, Ginger, he said, the rest of the company were digging in behind us. There must have been about, about the width of a road, a bit farther than that. You know, from my house, say, at the end of the road, about 30-odd yards. So I said, well, this is a lot of good. So Peter said, well, soldiers like me, bugger this. He says, come on, we'll go back. Well, Peter was about 33 years old, you know, he'd seen a bit. And he started to run. I said, well, I'm with you, Peter. So we run back towards this trench that the rest of the company were digging. Now, being a bit more sprinty and faster than Peter, I cleared this heap of earth into slit trench feet first. I went like that, straight in, feet first, landed. And Peter must have been about a couple of seconds behind me, and a mortar bomb busted on the trench, and he got wounded in the back of the head. I didn't realise that till I was in the trench. Mind, I was in a bit of a state then. I could hardly hold a cigarette. Anyway, the lad said, Peter's been wounded. I couldn't believe it, like, you know. So I said to the officer, I said, you know, Peter's been wounded. So he opened his cigarette case, and he took out a tube of morphine. I don't know if you've seen them. I've got morphine in a tube with a needle. He said, give that to him. So I rolled his sleeve up, Peter, and for the life of me, I couldn't put that needle in his arm. It was like rubbery, you know. But anyway,